We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast. My name is Steven, and I am the host, as always. Joining me is my guy, Tyler. Tyler, what's up, man? How are you doing today?
Pretty excited, man. This feels like a hot-button topic about who the Chargers should take at five, and specifically, which of the pass catchers should they take. There are rounds beyond that. I think you and I have started to dive into more of those round two, round three guys. But yeah, it should be interesting. I'm curious what you think about the situation, what the chat thinks. Should be fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of hot topics around number five. It's hilarious going through the offseason. Happens every single year where like people are like, trust the process, I like all the guys. And then usually around now, people are starting to say, you know, X prospect or bust, and that's starting to happen. And there's a lot of League Neighbors fans. There's a lot of Brock Bowers fans. There's a lot of Roma Dunze fans. Not as many Joe Alt fans out there, unfortunately, for Mr. Joe Alt. But it is what it is. Alex Katzen and I kind of touched on the Joe Alt stuff yesterday. Me and you have touched on the Joe Alt stuff last week in terms of adding offensive linemen. So today we want to talk about specifically adding a weapon, a playmaker, you know, because we have to include Brock Bowers in this conversation. And frankly, Brock Bowers is the only tight end I'm interested in this draft. So we'll have a conversation about all of those guys. Should be a lot of fun. We'll revisit some stuff from 2023 from the Chargers roster, have conversations about that. You know, this is kind of a bigger picture way for us to discuss the wide receiver position specifically while also talking about Brock Bowers. So it should be a lot of fun.
Or terrible.
Or terrible, depending on your opinion, I guess. Okay, so let's talk first and foremost about 2023. I think it's only fair that we start the conversation with Keenan Allen. And it was really interesting, like going back and looking at some of the numbers, you know, now that we've had some time to look at things. Obviously, he missed the last four games due to the heel injury. He said after the season was over that he probably would have played if they had more to play for, if Justin and everybody else was there too. So I don't know how much we like hold that against him. Like, I think he probably still would have missed like two games, even if they were still like in it. But you look at the numbers from last season of when Keenan got injured. He was tied. He led the league in receptions at 108, which is a career high. He was fourth in receiving yards. He was 10th in yards per route run. He was fifth in first downs created, and he was 12th in passer rating when targeted. So at the time of his injury, Keenan was putting up arguably the best season of his career. He would have shattered every career high, and he did set a career high in receptions. So it's interesting to hear the talk about Keenan Allen, especially as it pertains to like people looking at the Chargers and their cap situation, and people still think that the Chargers could cut Keenan. I'd be pretty surprised about that. I think you agree there. But when you zoom out and look at Keenan on the future roster, Tyler, what kind of stands out to you about projecting towards the future for Keenan.
Yeah, I those last four games, I don't hold as much against him. I think that's part of why it helps to be a Chargers fan who's locked into the Chargers, because we know the sentiment and the feeling around those four games, what happened with Herbert, what Keenan has said about coming back. Obviously, he scored four touchdowns in the Pro Bowl or whatever it was, which is a lot further after the season, but still, like, it's not like he was like Mike Williams, you know, recovering from something super significant, season ending. Wow. Thank you, Shallister, for the $123.45 super chat. Wow. Okay. I guess we can't go Joe Alt now. That basically means we can't go Joe Alt. So pause there. Timeout. Shallister, if I'm saying that right, says my problem with Alt would be the position change. Do you trust that he would be able to convert over? So just jumping on that real quick. I know, I love what we're just about to talk pass catchers and we're back to offensive line.
It's okay.
I am curious if the Chargers look at this season and go, look, we're just building and stockpiling players to make the run in 25 and 26. If that's the case, then in theory, you could look at Joe Alt's rookie season and go, that's the year you figure it out at right tackle. And then everything really kicks up and we really try to compete the following year. That's kind of another direction they could go. Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think the position change I'm not in favor of, because for me, like, if you are drafting a guy in the top five, you want to have the best possible case scenario for his career. And for Joe Alt and his career, the best possible case for him is that he stays at left tackle. It's where he's played the last 3 years. And so I just think if the goal is to maximize the talent, that's easier said than done for Joe Alt if he stays at left tackle. It's not an option for the Chargers. They have Rashawn Slater. And as we've discussed several times, he cannot and will not move to right tackle. So I'm not necessarily anti Joe Alt. I think he's a high caliber prospect. I do have a high first round grade on him. For me, it's easier for me to envision Olu Fashanu at right tackle than it is Joe Alt, because I think Fashanu has just like the faster twitch athletic traits that Joe Alt does not have. Joe Alt is a stiffer athlete because he's 6'8". So I'm not anti Joe Alt. I'm not, if they took him at five, I would understand it. It's not my choice, but I think there are other ways for the Chargers to maximize that pick at number five if they stay there. We'll talk about guys today.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, getting back to Keenan here. Very appreciative of that super chat. Very generous from Mr. Shallister. So we do really appreciate the support there. Getting back to your thoughts on Keenan. I don't know if you remember where you were at mid-thought there.
Okay, so projecting forward, I am very comfortable with him for more than just next year. I'm comfortable with him for really, you know, 3 years, I think. And he said he wants to play for a few more years. So he's in it to get there. He's in it to pass Antonio Gates. I feel comfortable with not just this year, but at least one more year. So he sticks, in my opinion. He stays. It's important for Justin Herbert, not just, you know, on the field with the X's and O's, but in the comfort, in the relaxation, in the just the clutch moments you need him. Keenan Allen is still Justin Herbert's guy, and they're great buddies. And so I just don't think you break that up right now.
Yeah, I'm on board with that, as we've said. Dan Jeremiah had a tweet the other day where he's like, a true definition of a wide receiver one is that you, when you're in the red zone, when you're on third down, everybody knows where the ball is going. That guy still gets open. That guy still converts, still makes a big play. And that's still Keenan Allen. Like, he still is one of the best, maybe not top eight, maybe not top 10, but he's still one of the best 15 wide receivers in the league. And in a league where the wide receiver position is so stacked and it's so difficult to find like a true wide receiver one these days, having a guy like Keenan Allen is extremely valuable. In terms of, because I think we're all on the same page, maybe at least amongst the guilty as charged people, about keeping Keenan Allen and extending him. I'm curious about his contract future, because if you look at like last offseason, DeAndre Hopkins, he didn't have a ton of like value per se. There was only two teams really negotiating with him. He signed a 2-year, $13 million contract extension with the Tennessee Titans. Not a contract extension, outright contract. He was a free agent. And Odell Beckham Jr. signed a 1-year, $15 million deal with the Baltimore Ravens. So, like, I'm not a contract expert. Arjun's not here. We'll ask him this at some point. But in terms of like his number for Keenan and a potential contract extension, you know, he's at average per year 20.025 right now. Any thoughts there initially? Again, no, like we're diving into the details here, but what's kind of your number if you could rework a deal for Keenan?
Oh boy. Definitely was not prepared for that one. So
I know I kind of threw that at you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're good. I have honestly no particular idea for this one. I'm not going to throw out some number and pretend like I have no idea.
Okay. Fair enough. Maybe something to keep in mind for that DeAndre Hopkins number. We'll see what happens there. Let's talk about Mike Williams briefly. I think we still expect him to be cut, but I think in particular of like adding wide receivers, I think we do have to kind of contextualize what Mike Williams is again for the Chargers, for Justin Herbert. You've mentioned the EPA per play stat. He tore his ACL in week 3. He had his ACL surgery on October 26th. And when he had that surgery, Ian Rappaport mentioned that he was expected to be ready for training camp this upcoming season. Mike Williams also told reporters after the season was over that he was ahead of schedule. I guess the question for Mike Williams, I think we all expect him to be moved. Is that still a cut for you? Or do you think that there is a chance that the Chargers could trade him and get some value for him?
Never say never, but I think it's a cut. I just think it's a cut. Chargers fans want him to be traded. Of course you want the draft pick, I guess, but like what, think of another team. If I said, hey, Chargers fans, the Panthers have a receiver who costs $30 million this year, tore his ACL and has an injury history and isn't like really productive as is, would you like him for a third or fourth round pick? Like, I don't think Chargers fans would say yes. And I think the reverse is true. Look at it, McMillan's elsewhere. So I think it's a cut, honestly.
Yeah, I'm still of that same mentality. I guess in terms of replacing him, the next question then would be talking about the draft picks, but also we have to measure in here Quentin Johnson and where he fits into this offense. I don't think the Chargers should, and Quentin Johnson's presence should preclude them from taking a wide receiver at number 5. But in terms of where your expectations are in terms of the role for Quentin Johnson, is he the Mike Williams replacement? Is he kind of more of the backside Z replace? Like, where are you at with Quentin now that we've had some time to think about that?
Yeah, that is definitely the tough one there, because there's so much investment in a player that if he were a third round pick, you really wouldn't think much about this. Honestly, even you could argue there's more conversation with Josh Palmer potentially. He's the only one who gave McDuffie any kind of trouble this year. You know, he can be that kind of receiver, but that's another conversation with the injuries. With Quentin Johnston, I honestly think you treat him as if he's your wide receiver. Well, no, that's not fair, because he'd only be a wide receiver 4 if he took a guy at 5. I just don't have a lot of expectation for him to slide into this system and be like, oh, great, he's going to replace Mike Williams. Obviously, you're not talking about roles. I know you're not talking about roles, because those are two very different roles, and that's not going to be the case, I don't think, unless they keep pushing the Quentin Johnson X stuff, which has not been good for him. I'm not comfortable for him. I have such a time figuring out what to do with him. I mean, the good news is everyone thinks he had the worst rookie season ever, and he still almost had 500 yards. Like, it wasn't the worst thing that could have happened, I guess. But the numbers in separation, the hands, all that just screams, you don't have much there, not really reliable. So I think you find someone to play ahead of him, or maybe that's Josh Palmer. I don't know. He was my wide receiver 5, your wide receiver 4. You had him technically ranked lower on the board overall. So it's really tough. You know, if it was like, okay, where does JSN fit in this year? You know, or something, then I could find that and make more sense and buy into that more. But where does a receiver we didn't love with a very, very specific role that didn't even get to be expressed last year fit in? Where does that fit in a Greg Roman offense where today, you know, Chris Rehm drops the article and the stuff with Greg Roman's out, and it's very much, we're going to run the football.
Yeah.
So where does like Quentin Johnson fit into that? I don't know. Honestly, the best answer is that I genuinely do not know.
Yeah, it's a tough conversation. So if you look at Pro Football Focus and filter the rookie class to 20% of their team's respective targets, there were 17 wide receivers who hit that number. Quentin ranked 12th in targets, 13th in receptions, 12th in yards, 10th in yards after the catch per reception, 13th in yards per route run, 11th in missed tackles forced, 12th in first downs created, and 12th in passer rating when targeted. So not the worst rookie season ever, but when you contextualize it like that and also take into consideration that Mike tore his ACL in week 3, Palmer missed a bunch of time, it definitely paints a picture where Quentin has to really, really drastically improve this year. I think there is a role where he exceeds expectations at this point and is able to rebound in year 2 in the Greg Roman offense. I think you look at what Greg Roman has been able to do with guys like Miles Boykin and that kind of archetype, you know, previously, that big X receiver, like I could see it working out better. But then I've said before, like, I prefer Quentin as the Z. I prefer him, like, dude, backside digs and fades and crossers and slants and things like that. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they figure that piece out. Then you have Josh Palmer as well. You have Keenan. If you draft somebody at 5, does that really muddy things? And we can get into this because I think there are a lot of people who believe the Chargers should not take a wide receiver in the first round because of the guys that they have, because of the running the football stuff, because of other resources that they need. So let's transition this into making the argument for taking a wide receiver at number 5. What's kind of your biggest key point in adding to the wide receiver room instead of letting this group play out, maybe adding a later round pick at 5? What's the argument?
There's just too much variance in this wide receiver room. Partially injuries with Keenan Allen, definitely injuries with Josh Palmer. No idea what Quentin Johnson's role is going to be. So if I'm taking a wide receiver at 5, I'm doing that because there's too much variance in this room. Obviously, Darius Davis, not really like a true wide receiver. You know, we were begging for like more Alex Erickson targets and yeah. and he deserved it. Like, don't get me wrong, but this room just doesn't have it. And it's a room that needs turnover. And I think that while I do believe Keenan Allen can play for more years, this is Josh Palmer's last year of his current contract. Quentin Johnson, if we could find out this year that he's not even a part of the plans, by the end of this year, we could find, okay, he's Jalen Reagor. And like, it's just not happening. He's not going to be much on this team. He'll be on the team, but won't do much. And then Keenan Allen, maybe he doesn't get an extension. So you're looking at next year when there's going to be so much potential turnover and your roster isn't there and it's not ready. And I think that you need to go find someone at 5 because they're also the best prospects available too, I think, at that point. I don't know where you have these guys ranked. If I'm looking at my particular board, if you're including Brock Bowers in there, I guess, but like right now I have Bowers, Neighbors, Odunze, 1, 2, 3, without Marvin Harrison Jr., which I have not graded because I'll wait, because I'll just get depressed knowing they'll never get him. But like, like those are your best
never
players.
Tyler,
no, I don't know about this one. Arizona does that, like I'll buy a Cardinals jersey, like I'll fly out there and, you know, do somersaults in Flagstaff or wherever they are. But
yeah,
the room needs the next thing. What is the turnover of this roster? We have to prepare for the turnover of the roster. That's my best bet for it. I think they're the best prospects available over tackle, over corner, over edge, over D tackle. I think the best prospects are the receivers. And Daniel Jeremiah has hinted as much.
Yeah, I think you did a great job there of highlighting the uncertainty of the future roster. I just think from a league-wide perspective, like aside from the Chiefs who won the Super Bowl, every team in the league is trying to stockpile weapons and be able to access parts of the field that the defense is not going to allow them. I mean, the defense is really focusing in on limiting big plays, and the way that you do that is by having high-end weapons. And for the most part, more weapons is the way that teams get to the final four rounds. I mean, you look at the Ravens in particular, and we can talk about the Greg Roman stuff, but the other thing they did was they added Odell Beckham Jr., who we just talked about. They added Nelson Agholor. They drafted Zay Flowers. They added Isaiah Likely previously. They got Rashad Bateman to stay healthy. Like, they went 1 through 6 at playmaking positions, and that's what really elevated, or at least helped elevate, the passing attack. Obviously, you look at the 49ers, you look at the Lions, you look at these other teams. It creates such a higher floor if you can add that weapon and just jumpstart your offense. I think also if you're concerned, the Chargers probably are not concerned about the Greg Roman offense, but we might be. And the way to kind of mitigate the risk at the passing offense is, hey, let's add in an explosive big play threat to this offense. Let's add in a future wide receiver one and be able to jumpstart the passing attack, I think would make a lot of sense. And then there's also the financial side of things here too. The Chargers would go from having two $20 million receivers who were the first team to do that to having a bunch of guys on rookie contracts. And I think Keenan will stick around, but you would have Keenan, you would have Palmer, you would have Quentin, you would have a rookie, you have Darius Davis. All of those guys would all be on rookie contracts. And it's just a really nice transition from a cap standpoint to go from having the most expensive wide receiver room in the league to probably the cheapest at that point once you move off of Mike Williams' contract. So I think the uncertainty that you mentioned, the maybe lack of enthusiasm about the Greg Roman passing offense and just the financial side of things all make a strong argument about taking a wide receiver. And that's even before we get to the actual prospects who are in this class.
Yeah. And you got to find someone to be the next constant for Herbert. Again, it's probably Keenan Allen, but even then there is a few games missed every year. I just think they need that one more guy. So yeah, I have Bowers graded higher, but I will probably have receivers, at least two of them, ranked higher than Bowers by positional value. So I'm in the middle of this argument so far.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's totally fair. And to your point, we think Keenan can play another year or two. We're comfortable with that. But let's say he plays at a high level this year, and then next season he starts to fall off a little bit. Well, then it's a great transition for whoever the Chargers take at number 5 to be that guy. So,
yeah,
like I've gotten the comment a lot. It's like, well, the Chargers would be drafting a wide receiver 2, 3, depending how you feel about Josh Palmer, Quentin, or whatever. And it's like, yes, but at the same time, you're probably looking at your wide receiver 1 in 2025. Like he's the guy going forward. And that's just like before we get to the positional guys. So you mentioned Marvin Harrison Jr. I'd be pretty shocked at this point if the Chargers got him. But the quarterback buzz is real right now. Daniel Jeremiah expects there to be 4 quarterbacks at minimum taken in the top 8 at this point in time. Dane Brugler echoes that same sentiment for what it's worth, which is great news for the Chargers. Maybe Marvin Harrison Jr. falls in their laps. Maybe they can trade down, whatever the case may be. We're not going to talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. a whole lot, but he's still a tier above the other guys, in my opinion. Do you share that same sentiment?
I have not watched him, but my assumption is yes. And frankly, I've watched him enough by association and seen everything else. Having watched other offensive line play, or other teams, other DBs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have to officially watch to see. But I even think that, in my opinion, and I'm curious because I want to have this discussion, I still feel that Jamar Chase is better than Neighbors and Odunze, in my opinion. Like that, I would still rank him ahead of the other two. If you ranked him higher, or the other two guys higher, because they actually played this year, Jamar Chase, the COVID year kind of threw off that final year, so he didn't play. Like, I get that.
Sure.
But to me, I don't buy that either these guys are Jamar Chase just yet. I actually think it's, I don't say disrespectful to Jamar Chase, but I really do think he was that guy.
Yeah, I don't.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Disagree with that by any means. Okay, let's start with Malik Nabers, because we both still have him graded higher than Odunze at this point in time. What's the vision for Malik Nabers? What's the argument for taking him at five for you?
Most explosive player, I think, in terms of yak potential, of missed tackles forced, and he's special. You know, a lot of these players, like, they're good. Look at these receivers in the class, like, they're good. They've got something good to them, but there are a few really, truly special players. And you want to take the guys that are just, they treat the rest of the competition like they're either smaller than they are, or they're slower than they are, or whatever. And Nabers is someone who at any point in time is going to house it. It's a screen. But at the same time, you watch him on some of the comeback stuff. Again, the only person I think I've ever seen get 5 yards of separation on a back shoulder fade, I think against like Florida or whatever, like the fact that he could get separation on that is incredible. Mm-hmm. I just think he's explosive down the field, short, intermediate, you name it. He's smart. Like, he knows when to turn after he catches the ball, where to turn. It's just a sixth sense for him. He's explosive. I think it's, while I don't think Greg Roman's passing attack is going to be like ultra diverse and so many different amazing things going on, I think if you could just place the ball in somebody's hand and say, go do something awesome with it, I think that makes everything very easy for you and kind of makes you look good in a way. It's maybe less simple than just, hey, throw it to Odunze. Odunze is going to catch it. But at the same time, like, you, I feel like the floor is almost higher with how explosive he is over Odunze, who I think is very, very good, an elite talent for sure. But I feel like there's a certain way you have to play Odunze. Nabers, I think you just lock him in and go.
Yeah, Nabers is definitely more position versatile and scheme versatile, and you hit a lot of what he does well. I think for me, like, one of the things that is underrated about his game is the tempo that he plays with. Like, he's so good at controlling his speed, because it, like, there's a lot of fast guys out there. Like, they're like Jalin Hyatt last year, like, just run right by you. But there's no nuance to, like, that kind of player. And I think that's obviously why he fell to, like, the third round. Malik Nabers has the ability to stop on a dime, set people up. Like, he's not necessarily, like, a technician in terms of his route running ability, but his body control, his tempo, like, he really is able to set people up that way. And that's something that's always been very impressive to me. And, like, I don't know if he's going to, like, be Henry Ruggs fast. I don't think he needs to be. But he is going to be extremely fast. Like, I do expect like a 4-3 type of player there. And then just the balance that he plays with. There was a rep against Florida where he kind of ran a hook route. It was like a deep hook route, like 10 yards. He caught it, immediately made somebody miss. He made a second guy miss. And then he ran like 10 yards, like the yards after catch. Speed is real. And then he also like broke a tackle. He's tough after the catch too. So Malik Nabers, like, I don't know if I have a solid opinion about him, like, versus Jamar Chase or like whatever, but I think you look at him in a vacuum as a prospect, he's a blue chip prospect for me all day long. And for me, he's right there neck and neck with the non Marvin Harrison Jr. and Brock Bowers grades in this class. And I do think that we'll get to the Bowers conversation here in a minute, but Malik Nabers is a blue chip player all day long. I think he adds a lot of what you need in this kind of world where you're trying to find explosive plays without throwing the ball deep. Malik Nabers is that guy who can take a mesh route and make somebody miss and get 15 yards. He can take a slant and make somebody miss and get 15 yards. Like, he's that kind of talent. To me, like, he's like a taller Jalen Waddle. Like, I think that's kind of your floor there, because Jalen Waddle had that same kind of tempo, speed, body control, but Jalen Waddle's like 5'9". he's a shorter guy and skinnier. Malik Nabers is a little bit, you know, more built. So I love Malik Nabers. I totally understand why people are enamored with the idea of adding him to a Justin Herbert-led offense. And it makes a lot of sense because he is that blue chip kind of player. I don't buy him being like closer to Marvin Harrison Jr. than to wide receiver 3 personally, but still a blue chip player for me.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the longest time to watch Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know. I don't buy it. I don't buy that this entire last 2 years, we've believed it's been Marvin Harrison Jr. And then in 2 months, it's like, well, actually, it could be this other guy who's great. Of course, he's great. And listen, you tell me Cardinals get, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., Chargers get Nabers. Who has a better rookie season? Like, yeah, sure, it could be Nabers.
Yeah.
But I don't know about that one just yet.
Back in 2021, Kirk Herbstreit sat down with Jackson Smith and Jigba, Chris Olave, and Garrett Wilson. And he asked the three of them, like, who's the best Ohio State receiver right now? And they all looked at each other and said, Marvin. And Marvin was a freshman at the time and he was barely playing. So if Marvin Harrison Jr. is better than those cats, I think he's pretty damn good.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, he's even got the family history in there. I mean, come on. Like, it just everything about it. I mean, coming from Ohio State, which is probably wide receiver U right now. All aboard.
Yeah. And there are some critics about him out there because of, you know, he had a down season in 2023, but like, watch the quarterback and then watch Jaden Daniels at LSU and come back to me. So let's get to the Romo Dunze part of this conversation. You and I both watched Jalen Polk last night, today, and by association, more Romo Dunze. You said on Twitter that you're elevating his grade a bit after kind of rewatching him. Why are you adding to the grade after that?
When you're grading as a teacher, sometimes you grade the first 10 or so one way. Then when you go through the rest of the papers and you kind of find where like the different ranges are, you try to go back to the first ones you graded and maybe change the grade. I wasn't intentionally doing that with Romo Dunze, but having watched other players, maybe having watched Xavier Worthy's not so great hands, the last person I watched, going to watch Romo Dunze and with Daniel Jeremiah's idea in mind of, hey, when you know you got to win and you need a play, who's going to make it, even though you know 100% who it's going to. Yeah, Odunze showed up. The last game I watched for Polk was the Oregon game, and the literal very last play that Washington ran to score and get ahead was to Romo Odunze. Of course, Romo Odunze comes up with it, separates on, I think, like a fade on the left side, touchdown. Like, and just every time I watched him, every time I watched Odunze, and it's like it bears out in the stats as well, every single time he came down with it, and it was just so impressive. But it was kind of beyond just the contested catches. Like, there's a way that he separates and there's a way that he catches it. There's a way he glides, the way he moves. Just watching him, having watched 10 other or 11 other receivers since I've watched him, I just went, oh, okay, like recalibration, he really is that great. There's just a clutch gene to him. There's a confidence, there's a physicality. Even just like the prototype looking size to it. I don't know, number one, like, I don't know what it was, but everything about today, I watched Polk, really like Polk, but man, like, there was just something different about watching Romo Dunze. I like Nabers, those kinds of receivers, good ones, I guess. Like, I kind of like over some of the quote unquote, like, bigger contested guys, I guess.
Yeah.
But man, like, Odunze, it just was very special watching him again, because I wasn't like, okay, let's find all the things that are wrong or whatever about Romo Dunze. It was just, let's watch Polk. And oh, by the way, I get to appreciate Odunze. And so now, having watched some other games that weren't available before, that were now available to watch for Washington, I just found more things, like against Cal. Like, I didn't really watch the Cal game, but like, watching that game, watching Oregon, it's like, okay, there's something more special here than I realized. And I'm starting to see that it really just is a difference of style. And if you have Odunze over Nabers, half the league might. It's just a style thing for me, I think, at this point.
Yeah, and Nabers and Odunze, I think, is a much closer conversation than Nabers or Odunze to Marvin Harrison Jr. But it is a difference of style. And I think Ondunze is being misclassified on social media as like a big bodied jump ball guy. That's not his game. Like it really isn't. Like if you watch his catches, there's like maybe two jump balls that I've seen of his. Like he's such a clean separator. And just because like a catch is classified as like a contested catch doesn't mean that it's a jump ball. Like I've seen more jump balls out of Jalen Polk than I have Rome Odunze.
Uh-huh. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, you know, you look at Rome Odunze and I think there is definitely a lack of like creativity and juice after the catch. And I think you can justify that. But at the same time, he doesn't necessarily need to be that guy. To me, he's incredibly precise, and Odunze is a great Jalen guy. No, not even close. Odunze is very precise with his movements. He's very precise with his routes. I love his late hands ability. Like he's so good at deceiving cornerbacks, excuse me. And, you know, Jim Nagy had this tweet that wide receivers can win off the release. They can win at the top of the route, and they can win at the catch point. And Rome Odunze does all three of those at a very, very high level. I would argue an elite level at all three of those points. So he has the size. He has the speed. You know, he like people are talking about him like he's like a 4.55 guy. He's going to run in the low 4.4s next week at the combine.
Yeah.
Like this dude was a state champion sprinter in Nevada. He has the athletic ability that people are not saying that he does. I think he's like a 38-inch vertical guy, so he can jump to 10-foot broad as well. He's just so good at everything else. And I said this to Alex Katz, and I messaged him about it. I watched him, and I saw like a taller version of Chris Olave, like just so precise, always under control. Little limited after the catch, but
yeah,
you know, it's just the same kind of style receiver. And Chris Olave has been awesome in the NFL. So I think that I have neighbors as a blue chip player, and I think Rome Odunze is very, very close to that. I don't know if I can get all the way there, but Rome Odunze is definitely somebody that I would be interested to take in number five overall. And if this were a class with no quarterbacks like last year or the year before, then Rome Odunze is somebody that people would be stoked about at number five. It's just in this class that there are potentially three quarterbacks to go in the top three.
Yeah, no, I've grown to appreciate him more. And honestly, throughout this entire process, I watched one game of Odunze, and for the first time I watched him, I went, really? Like, really? Are we sure? And it's just kind of shows maybe who he is upon further study. And not YouTube, you know, that I think the more you sit with a prospect, it really just speaks to how good he really is. That I honestly didn't like him at first. And now, like I just mentioned, like I think he's one of the five best players in this class, and honestly deserving of the fifth overall pick, should they take him. I hate to like do this because now it feels like it sets up expectations. The last player I really did not like initially, that I grew to love by the end of it all and feel like he was an easy first rounder, a great pick, was Rashawn Slater. The first game I watched of his, I didn't love it. The more I watched, the more I realized how good he was. And that was the last time I really watched a player in this kind of range.
Well, stylistically though, like if you look at Rashawn, he's athletic, but he's got some size limitations. He's not like super powerful. Like he's all technique. And he's like, he does have some freak athletic traits. So his core strength, I think, is pretty ridiculous. But stylistically, like Rome is that kind of player. Like he is a very, very high end athlete, but he's not like super twitchy. He's not like, you know, after the catch, but he's just so good about everything. I also think he's a fantastic blocker. Like I watched some blocking tape and I'm like, this guy like loves to block. All the Washington guys like to block. Last thing for me about Odunze that you mentioned earlier potentially is like when things were down at Washington, whenever they needed a bucket, it was always Rome Odunze. And you watch the tape against Michigan and Jalen Polk could not get open. I like Jalen Polk a lot. He could not get open that game. Rome Odunze was cooking Will Johnson all game long, and Will Johnson's a potential first rounder next year. And Rome Odunze was the guy who kind of brought Washington back. Offensive line couldn't protect Penix. Penix was making mistakes. Polk couldn't get open. It was Odunze who kind of made that interesting for a little bit there. So I'm a huge fan of Odunze. I think he's a great prospect. I think in another class, same thing as Neighbors, you know, both of these guys are like no-brainer wide receiver ones in most classes. It just so happens that like the best receiver prospect I've ever seen is in this class. But Odunze is a fantastic prospect. I totally understand why people have him over Neighbors and some people don't. I can understand the argument for both. Like, I think Chargers fans are really enamored with Malik Neighbors and I get it, but both of these guys are right there neck and neck in terms of the level of quality of prospect.
Yeah, and I don't think in this discussion, with our discussion today, I don't think anyone should walk away, and we'll never say this, it has to be this person, and the other two are wasted picks. And I guess we can get into Brock Bowers at some point. But I saw Chase Daniel said, you know, the Chargers can't waste a pick on Brock Bowers. And I'm like, I don't know if that's how it phrase the best tight end prospect we've seen, or that at least we've seen in terms of our grades last 4 or 5 years. I don't know if I'd call it a waste. And I really don't think if Romo Odunze gets drafted, it's like, oh, F this. Like, what a terrible player. It will not be like last year for a lot of Chargers fans when the Chargers went with Quentin Johnston. You might have a preference for sure, but like, we're talking not a guy that we'd have taken that range versus someone who I think definitely deserves it and is significantly better.
Yeah, no, the Chargers have a lot of options here. The waste, like the tight end conversation, and we can jump into this. It's becoming very much like the Bijan Robinson conversation, and people are talking about like what this does financially. Like if you draft Brock Bowers, like he's like tight end 15 or whatever on the market. I don't really care. Like, give me the best tight end prospect we've seen in the last decade. Like it's a talent thing for me. Like he is an elite prospect. And I happen to think that drafting elite prospects is good business for you. And sure, like theoretically, like his rookie contract would not be the same kind of bargain as a wide receiver rookie contract. But if Bowers hits his potential, you're looking at a guy who at his second contract, you're paying $16 million, $17 million. If Malik Neighbors or Romo Odunze hit their contract, the Chargers are looking at paying him probably like $37 million at this point, the way the wide receiver contract market is going. Like Justin Jefferson is going to hit $34, $35 million this year. And it's going to continue to go up and up and up and up with all these guys. So maybe it's not a rookie contract bargain, but it's definitely a second contract bargain in my opinion. And so like financially, I just don't think that's as strong of an argument as it's being made out to be.
Yeah, and I'm also... I don't know that one. I'm 50-50. Like I get the arguments and the numbers are presented and I hate to sound like, oh, I don't care, but that doesn't bug me as much. And we're also talking about you actually having to maximize these players.
Yeah.
You don't just like draft a position and position plays football. It's the players. And how can you maximize these guys? I'm not 100% sold that Greg Roman, Jim Harbaugh and these guys will maximize Malik Neighbors to the same level that they will max out Brock Bowers. I just feel like with everything the Chargers are doing, frankly, with Justin Herbert and what we've seen with some tight ends before, when there is great chemistry, I just feel like even if maybe the contract isn't maximized, I guess, and the surplus value isn't as maximized, I guess, as a Malik Neighbors or Romo Odunze, I really just feel like Brock Bowers is the best. Like, who can the Chargers be the most right about? Like, even if at that pick, they make that pick and you think it's wrong, in 2 years, who will the Chargers actually have been right about the most? Or who are they most likely to be right about who they picked? I really think that's Brock Bowers. Like, I really just feel like head coach, offensive coordinator, also the fact that they have literally no other tight end, Justin Herbert and everything. Like, it just feels like Bowers fits. And they can maximize him the most. Like, and, you know, okay, so like the argument for the value and the contract stuff is, okay, the tight end has to be a top five tight end by this year for the value to make any sense. Great. Like, that'll happen. I'm not really concerned about that being an issue.
Yeah.
And if you're betting against Justin Herbert, that's on you. I'm not going to.
Yeah, I think the team fit for Bowers is definitely cleaner because he's your immediate tight end one. He's not competing for targets with the other guys. You know, Bowers to me is a guy who comes in right away and he's maybe not like a home run pick as a rookie. Maybe he doesn't hit Sam Laporta numbers because the Chargers have different guys to throw to. Maybe they don't throw as much as the Lions did. but he's a guy who elevates the efficiency of the Chargers offense at a really high rate. He helps every single aspect of the offense, and not to say that the wide receivers don't, but Brock Bowers can be your big slot receiver. He can be an X receiver. He can be an inline tight end. I saw Georgia hand the football to him as on fourth down. This guy does everything at a really high level. And if you look at his receiving splits, like, he's not just a tight end. Like, he gets moved around the field all over the place, H-back as well. Like, he's a guy who can do everything out of the position well. He's not the kind of blocker as like a Darnell Washington. He's not like Will Disley. Like, he's not like going to get his hand in the dirt and set the edge for you, but he is a good blocker, especially on like outside zone runs, especially on like where he's be able to get on the move. He's a much better blocker than he's given credit for. And like, I love Dalton Kincaid. He's not even close to the kind of blocker that Brock Bowers is. Brock Bowers is a very, very good blocker. So he's not 6'7 and 275 pounds or whatever, like Darnell Washington, but he does everything well. And I think he just elevates the floor of the offense. Like, I can understand, like, if you want to debate, he's not worth the pick at number five because he's a tight end, because wide receiver is more valuable. I get it. But to me, Brock Bowers is right there neck and neck with Marvin Harrison Jr. In terms of grades, let me make sure I get this right. Right now, I have Marvin Harrison Jr. at a 7.75 grade, which is the second highest grade I've given out to a prospect, only behind Penei Sewell. And right now I have Brock Bowers at a 7.7, which would be the third highest grade I've ever given out to any prospect behind Penei Sewell and Marvin Harrison Jr. So if you're just trying to draft the best talent,
yeah,
I think that's Brock Bowers.
It is.
And I think it fits the offense at a cleaner level too.
Yeah, I agree. And the way that Bowers is being knocked down in terms of like the whatever you want, the direction you want to look at, I don't agree with, like, okay, you know, is he, everyone's like, oh, he's not an elite blocker. It sort of depends on what you're asking him to do. Do I think he's, oh, there goes all the sirens. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if you could hear that.
Yeah.
Okay. Where was I going? Oh, I don't really, the whole blocking thing, like, okay, how is Laporta as a blocker? How is Kincaid as a blocker? Laporta set the record for tight ends. Kincaid set a record for Bills rookie receptions. Like, and no one's like, oh, I wish they were a really good blocker. Like, you know, yeah. To me, and like, I'm not saying I know how Travis Kelce was coming out of college or whatever, but no one's like, oh yeah, let's see like Travis Kelce line up as the Y and just uproot edge rushers all day. Like,
yeah,
that's not like, who cares? You know, that's not really where we want to go. It's a strange obsession with like how Brock Bowers literally looks.
Yeah. You know, he's like balding and people can't handle it.
and like, he just doesn't look. I've watched enough Corey Linsley walking around in like a sweaty gray shirt and shorts and flip flops and slides. Yeah. You know that means elite athlete. Like,
do you remember the like happy birthday video they took? Yes. Of him like walking out to his kids.
Yes. Yeah. That Corey Linsley fit means like elite, and that, yeah. Brock Bowers had the same thing. And everyone's like, "Oh, this guy doesn't look very big or intimidating, or he doesn't look like, you know, whatever." Yeah. But like, the dude puts on a helmet and he's like Thor out there. Like, he just grabs Mjolnir and gets out there and just kills the SEC. And I mean, to be able to do what he did at 18, 19 and just throttle the entire rest of college football at such a young age, yeah, is just so impressive. Like, Neighbors is obviously very special, but Bowers just treated everyone like children. Like, everyone was children to him. You put him out there in college football and he looks and plays and is bigger, faster, stronger than everybody. Yeah, he's a better prospect than Neighbors or Odunze, in my opinion. The question just becomes of positional value. And so I get it. I get if you go Neighbors. I get if you go Odunze. But to me, Bowers is the best player. I don't know where he's going to be at grade-wise for me compared to other players, like in the 3-4 years that we've been doing this. But will definitely be the best tight end. And, you know, you're talking about how this could be like the Bijan Robinson conversation of last year. It would be like the Bijan Robinson conversation of last year if the next best running back was Zach Charbonnet. And like, I don't mean that as a knock, but like, yeah, there's no intermediate really here. There's no, yeah, like, okay, we can get Jahmyr Gibbs at what we thought like the 20s and then going at 12. But still, like, we thought Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, okay, at least you can get Jahmyr Gibbs. Yeah. There was like this class, like, it's Bowers. I think Sanders is totally cool. There's nothing else. Brock Bowers is the prize because he's like the only other guy.
Yeah, and I think Rex brought this up. You know, he had the ankle injury, and people are a little apprehensive about that. The guy had ankle surgery and missed 3 games, and then he came back and finished the season. He had a great SEC championship game against Alabama. So I understand that, but, you know, I went back and looked at the numbers of all of the relevant tight ends of like the last 5 years, like the guys in the top, you know, first two rounds, Kyle Pitts, Trey McBride, Dalton Kincaid, Sam Laporta, Michael Mayer, and then Bowers. And Bowers' freshman season is like just as good as the best seasons of the other guys in terms of, you know, yards per route run, yards after catch per reception, total yards, all that stuff, first downs created. And this is a guy who, even with the ankle injury and everything that happened this past season, he averaged 8.7 yards after the catch per reception this year. Almost a full first down. That's more than Xavier Worthy. That's more than Malik Nabers. That's more than Jatavion Sanders, obviously. It's more than all these other guys, wide receivers, who are yards after the catch threats, more than Xavier Leggett. This is a guy who can do so many different things for your offense. And Jim Harbaugh loves tight ends. He recruited Brock Bowers to Michigan. Michigan at the time was a little coming down off a down season, so he chose Georgia. Hard to blame him. He won 2 national championships back-to-back. This, to me, it's just such a clean fit. I don't think the Chargers can go wrong with any of these three players, but I think Brock Bowers is the best prospect of the trio.
I agree. We'll see how I rank them in the end. I think Brock Bowers ends up higher on the board, but we'll see. It'll be close for me and Nabers.
Yeah, I totally get it. But Nabers is a blue chip receiver all day for sure. So it'll be interesting to see. Like, the Chargers, what they do in free agency is going to tell us a lot, because there are some good tight ends that could get cut that the Chargers could add. And if they add multiple tight ends, then we know they're not taking Bowers.
Yeah. Well,
I guess never say never, but
yeah, tough, because then it's like, okay, if they add like a receiver in free agency, I would still think, well, I don't know.
Yeah. And yes, Dennis, if the Chargers had taken one tight end last year, any tight end in any round, maybe we're not even having this conversation.
Yeah. No, I'm glad I watched 18 tight ends last year. That was cool. I had a lot of fun watching them.
Yeah. The interior defensive tackle class this year is becoming like last year's tight end class for me. Like, I love this interior defensive line class.
Oh yeah. It's great. Like, I can't wait to start talking about them.
There's like 10 guys that I'm like, yeah, top 50 player all day.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I've found one I haven't liked yet. Hmm. Or even not even like really liked. I mean, they're all so good.
Yep. All right, Tyler, any other thoughts about the offensive playmakers today?
Just stay patient. You know, everyone who's listening and we're getting ready for this draft thing, for the Chargers to pick at 5 or not at all. Like, just be patient, whoever they pick. If you guys are all about whoever Jim Harbaugh wants, be prepared for it to probably be Brock Bowers. So if you're all on board with that, keep that consistent for the next few months.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's hard to go wrong between any of these three players. They're all elite, high-level prospects. So the Chargers are in a good spot. If they want to add a playmaker, they got some choices. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us today. We are going to be having some combine coverage next week. We'll be able to kind of dive into Joe Ortiz's press conference. It was released today that Jim Harbaugh is not going to be speaking to the media next week, at least not at the combine. We'll see what happens there. The Chargers coordinators all spoke to the media today, so we'll have some thoughts there once we're able to kind of dive into what they said. Shout out Ryan Ficken. He's stoked to be back, and we're stoked to have him back. So yeah, lots of exciting stuff to come next week. Be sure to like, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff. It does really help continue to grow the show. All right, that's going to do it for us today. We'll see you guys next week. As always, bolt up.